Jamie, what happened? Tell us what happened. This is crazy. Why do we have to run away from the club? Okay, I have already started things weirdly. Welcome to the episode. We'll get back to Jamie in time. In today's episode, I will be reviewing the birthday party movie, documentary, I guess, called Mutiny in Heaven. And at the same time, I will be recalling when I saw them play at the Peppermint Lounge in 1983. So over 40 years ago, that's interesting on its own, in terms of my powers of recollection. So here we go. It's the Diane's Kamikaze Fun Machine Podcast! So a little bit of background. I am an enormous birthday party fan. I was at the time, in real time. There is a movie out now. It just was released. Directed by Ian White, called Mutiny in Heaven, The Birthday Party. That period of time in New York and probably all over the world was great for music. And there were a lot of mysterious bands, a lot of cool goth bands, a lot of bands coming to the United States for the first time, although I did not see the Birthday Party on their first tour. And they broke up not long after the tour that I saw them on. But those times were really maniacal anyway. I was in my early 20s. So there was no bar unturned, and I was going to clubs and seeing music 4 or 5 days a week. The Birthday Party had a reputation. Their music preceded them for sure. And I think we were all wondering if their performance was going to match their records. Like, really, would they bring it? And this was a period of time. I hate to say this, but young people really don't get it. There were no cameras, surveillance-wise at least, and I'm glad that there was some video shot of the band, obviously. But that was a period of time where, like, you got away with stuff. If you were a rule breaker, yeah, you just kept on going. And all I kept on thinking was, their music is so deranged. And we've heard about the shows. Let's do it. It was great to see the movie to relight those images from the 80s and to remember what that time was like. A lot of the movie is linear. And what I'll say too is, because I've been a fan of the band lifelong, if you want to use that term, I was familiar with all the players, everybody featured in the movie. I was not being introduced to anyone new. There were certainly some revelations of details and some great, cool, fuzzy performance footage, which, you know, brought me back. Roland S. Howard, Mick Harvey, and Nick Cave are all narrating over live and studio footage of varying qualities of the Birthday Party. R.I.P. Roland, we miss you. And if you're not a fan of the band, or if you're not familiar with the band, this still gives you an insight to the period of time, what was going on in music, and what could be possible just by going on impulse, let's say. And I won't say that that's the entire drift of the movie, but the film makes it look as if no one was really in charge of the Birthday Party. You know how usually there's one person in the band who has their shit together. They gelled as a unit, but it really seemed as if they went from opportunity to opportunity or bad event to bad event, and they moved as a band, which I found really interesting. There was also some great insights about their beginnings. The movie starts off with footage of the boys next door, who I was never a fan of. And of course, appreciating the birthday party's output so much, I did some digging at some point in my life, went backwards, and found I had no use for the boys next door. But the context and the connection from the leap from the boys next door to the birthday party was clarified. So there's a crucial bit of that story in there. It was very detailed about Mushroom's sub-label Suicide, the deal that they had with Boys Next Door. But there's a lot of factual bullet points in the movie. There's a lot of cartooning. There's a lot of fuzzy footage. And I do think that Mutiny in Heaven captures this certain rawness, caustic and possibly dismal feeling or aura that the band had living and performing. So back to the Peppermint Lounge. What I can tell you are just my takeaways, and I remember some thoughts that I had during the performance. I'm pretty sure it was in March of that year, 1983, and it was most likely one of the most evil embodied shows I've ever been to in my life. Like, Tracy Pugh ground his balls into his bass like a freaking serial killer. They were hellish in one swoop. And I do remember feeling drained and assaulted and wondering if I should be offended. And this was the performance I was expecting. I was hoping for, but sort of when you're watching a horror movie and you're looking because you're thinking it's going to be really gross, so you're not looking entirely. That's almost how I walked into that club, like, are the birthday party really going to do this? And yes, they did it. So I went with my friends Jamie and Joe. The way the Peppermint Lounge is set up, the stage is like a foot high. It's like a step high. So the band is not far above you. And there's just gear on stage and there's nothing behind the stage. So the gear is already set up and there's a room that's 20 or 30 feet away. My distance recollection might be way off, but it's not that far, and that's where the bands come out and walk to the stage and then go back. And in that period of time, me and my friends would go back to that doorway. We would just say hello. But I always felt like people, especially from out of town, who are coming to play, should be thanked. Give them a thumbs up. So what I'm saying is that my friends and I had this habit of just showing up at the stage door after the gig for like a second. Hi, how you doing? Great show. That was a habit. I still just remember how fucked up it was. If I were to sum it up in like a half a sentence or something, Roland Howard was sick, Nick Cave was angry, and Tracy Pugh wanted to fuck you and then kill you. Actually, Tracy Pugh wanted to kill you and then fuck you. That was my takeaway from the show. Fast forward to the performance is over. I'm sort of standing there stunned. My friends and I reconvene and just go, wow. And then Jamie goes, oh, you want to go to the door and say hello? And me and my friend Joe are just like, no. And all I can think of is, I don't know what performance you were just watching. And I said to her, I have nothing to say to this band. I have absolutely nothing to say to them. No. Joe and I head over to the bar because Jamie says she's going to go say hi. Like, I can't even imagine saying hi like that to any member of the band. And of course, Mick Harvey was there, but I don't have any visceral recollection. Sorry, Mick. But the show was sick. It was completely crazy. Anyway, so Joe and I head over to the bar, and before we can even order a drink, Jamie is back with us, and she's like, come on, let's go. Let's go. Let's go. Let's leave. Let's leave. Let's go. And we're both like, hang on, what happened? What happened? She's like, oh, nothing. They were really nice guys. Let's go. Let's leave. Let's leave. We gotta go. And she goes running out of the club. So on the way home, of course, we're like, what happened? And we're just dying. We just want to know, like, did somebody punch her? Or our minds went to many, many places. And she never, ever told us what happened. She's like, no, they were really nice guys. And there was not enough time for something to not have happened abruptly. She had to have been back there for less than 20 seconds. And to want to run out of the club. And that, to me, is more telling than the performance that we were all waiting for. Because they were at their crescendo. And although I don't know if anybody really got to see the wheels fall off of the band, I guess there is an alluding to that happening in the movie. But my friend Jamie's attitude and her whole state change from being like, cool, we're hanging out in a club, this is great, to like, I want to go home right now, was just perfect. And I never knew what happened. She never would tell us. And then I did see her in the past 5 years. And I asked her, and she honestly doesn't remember anymore. So clearly she blocked it out of her mind. So it was great to be drawn back to this really volatile time in life watching this movie. And Nick Cave avec mustache is just light years away from that persona. I mean, he is still alive. So good for him. At some point, years and years later, I saw Nick Cave do a solo performance at the Webster Hall Ritz. And at the very end, he closed with the words, good night, I love you all. And I remember responding, I was yelling at him and saying, you don't love anyone. So I guess that performance from 83 was still stuck in my head. Nick Cave starts his North American tour October 6th in New York. There is a whole schedule of screenings and debut dates for the film. I'm not sure how widely distributed Mutiny in Heaven is going to be. I did read that Mick Harvey, Phil Calvert, and director Ian White will be doing a Q&A at maybe more than one of the Sydney screenings. Check the show notes here to this episode, and I will list what I can. Links and all that goodness. It's certainly worth checking out. I felt it was kind of striking that the scenes, the live footage, was still palpable. Like, you could watch it and kind of get that this was unique and a really dodgy time, like that these people were certainly on the edge. The angle that the movie settles on about the breakup of the birthday party was like, it just happened. Like, it almost had to happen that the band was done. And I don't think I was really looking for anything catty. But the band has had a certain wattage to it, and I felt that it was pushed to the background in terms of the conversation. Overall, I would have liked to have seen more commentary from Roland, just because he's gone. Great powers of observation from him. He really, I think he understood where he was as a musician, in terms of being able to manipulate people and situations just from his sound. He liked upsetting people. That you got from it. So anyway, Do I have a way to tie this all together? Hang on. Yeah, probably not. And that concludes another episode. Thank you for tuning in. More on the way. My Instagram handle is one word, Diane Kamikaze. Kamikaze ends with an E. Follow me there. The full link to my index of shows can be found on wfmu.org/playlists/DK. So that's playlists, plural. And then the DK is both uppercase, capital letters. I am working on encore presentations. I've got years of interviews and podcasts. If there's something you'd like to see reposted, please get in touch. Send me email, diane@wfmu.org. And be sure to subscribe to the show. And if you like it, review it. Thank you. Diane's Kamikaze Fun Machine radio show can be heard on the WFMU Rock and Soul radio stream. That is New York time, 9 a.m. on Wednesdays. Thank you, thank you. See you next time. Always have fun. Self-expression is vital. Do it.